Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. Today, we have a special guest joining us, Van Houston, co-founder and director and lead trainer of Locked In, a grassroots organization comprised of people passionate about social justice and wanting to make a lasting change for those affected by injustices. Van has experience and much knowledge about the injustices in the country, in and out of the penal system. And he is here today to talk about his work in the communities and beyond. So without further ado, let's welcome Van Jones, co-founder of Locked In. Van, are you on with us?
Yes, I'm here. And corrections, Van Houston.
What did
Van
I say?
Houston. Van Jones is a CNN brother. You know, we both got bald heads, so it all works out.
You know something? I am so sorry. You know what? I'm so used to hearing and following Van Jones and the work he's doing. Van Houston, I said it right the first time. I don't know why I went off track, but I want to welcome you on the show. I feel very honored to have you come on, and I'm very interested in hearing more about your organization. We have mass incarceration in the United States, and I've been interviewing people from other countries as well who have spoken about the injustices in the United States prisons. They have been advocating for the incarcerated themselves in the country. There's been Franz Kurz, who's been advocating for two wrongfully convicted in Ohio. There's Jan Banning, who's been he's a professional photographer. And everybody can find these people, these advocates from other countries on the internet. Jan Banning's been advocating for a female incarcerated individual wrongfully convicted in Georgia. And the two in Ohio has been Donald Glenn and Shane Crum, who has been getting help from Franz Kurz of Germany. We also have Miriam Jacobs, a psychosocial therapist that comes on as much as she can. And she has been familiar with the prisons in the United States. She's worked in the prisons, or she's entered the prisons, but she also volunteers in her prisons in the Netherlands. But she talks about mass incarceration. The maximum most countries or all countries have is 25 years for any crime. However, if it's a terrorist or if it's serial killers, they do have life. But the problem in this country, as she mentioned so many times, is that we have mass incarceration, 2.3 million people in prisons, men, women, and youth, in prisons and jails across the country. And this is a major issue which needs to stop. And this is what's going to be addressed in the month of June for all of these people investing in prisons to make money. So I want to know a little bit or more about your organization.
So absolutely. And, you know, mass incarceration could be traced all the way back to the auction block and the formation of chain gangs and the financial benefit off of them with the Jim Crow laws and the process of it becoming big business to the point where private corporations like GeoCorp and Civic Corps have made billions of dollars off the suffering of others. So I'll give you an example of the politics that these people could play. So within California, it was a proposition passed that outlawed all private prisons. So GeoCorp and Core Civic lost hundreds of millions of dollars. But these politicians, in their greed and their manipulation, backdoored grassroots organizations and said, well, the voters said, we can't have private prisons anymore, so we have to shut them all down because the progressives are making too much noise. But what happened is the state of California and the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation rewarded over $200 million to these for-profit organizations that deal with the suffering of incarceration throughout the world. So it's a manipulation. It's about money. It's corrupt. It's a lot of fraud, and there's a lot of waste. And what we're doing right now is, well, we're doing several things, but I'll focus on what you opened up with. So what we're doing now is reaching out to other grassroots organizations, putting pressure on our local politician, because what Locked In focuses on is a top-down, bottom-up format where we pressure our local elected officials to create change through mass movement. A few years ago, Proposition 17 passed, which made eligible 50,000 formerly incarcerated individuals, men and women formerly in blue, that were eligible to push and vote and create change. So far as with that, that's what we're doing. But before I get too ahead of myself, I'll give you a little background on me. So at 17 years old, I was convicted of taking an innocent life, and I received a 15-to-life sentence. I was very involved in gang activities, chaos, and anything that I could find that was destructive. I ended up doing 27 long years in prison, and it's a lot of ups and downs, and we don't just have the time to go into all that. But I changed my life. I got around some men that challenged me. I engaged, and I succeeded in spite of prison, right? They put things in front of me, but it was the man that I did time with that helped me create change and progress forward. Locked In was created when I was in the cell by myself. I was in a very severe depression. I didn't really know how to deal with it, so I got busy. I got tired of feeling helpless, having correctional officers tell me what to do, when to lock up. I got tired of turning on the TV and seeing black men murder. I got tired of turning on the TV and seeing poor people being taken advantage of. And throughout my progression of change, I developed a lot of relationships from outside organizations that were coming in and investing in the individuals that were incarcerated. And with those relationships, I created Locked In CEA Inc. To focus on social justice issue and also focus on pre-adolescence and adolescence to stop that school-to-prison pipeline. So basically, in a nutshell, that's how Locked In was created.
You know, your story is similar to, he is now an attorney in New York, but Jeffrey Deskovic, at the age of 16, without even having his mother and grandmother there, they brought him to the police station. He ended up serving, I believe, around the same amount of time as you on a wrongful conviction. And he came out, and like yourself, he did something about it. He became a lawyer. So I admire anyone who has been wrongfully convicted coming out of prison and seeking justice for everyone. And what you're doing is amazing.
Well, I'm humbled, right? And so one of the slogans we use is we are the change. For years, when I was having behavior problems, you know, my mother, my strong, black, beautiful mother, used to try to get me help, right? But she was a single mother, and there wasn't no real structure in my house as far as other real male role models, except the violent ones. But they were always sitting me in front of people that I couldn't relate to, people that couldn't understand where I was coming from. And, you know, education is key, and it's important. But the people they set me in front of, they lacked the personal experience. And they used to always ask me, why? Why are you acting like this? Why are you being disrespectful? Why are you not going to school? And it's funny now when I reflect back on it, I kind of laugh a little bit because you're asking me to give you the answers to questions I have no idea about, right? I don't know why I'm emotionally stable. I don't know why I go off. I don't know why my attention span is slow, right? And they didn't know not to ask so questions because they didn't have the personal experience. So I know one of the things in Locked In, what we do in our program is We're really focused on giving system impacted people the opportunity to create change. So not only do we look for individuals that are educated, but we also look for people who who've been impacted by the justice system and could relate. And we don't need to go outside our community to create change in our community, right? We have some of the most intelligent, articulate, educated people right there. So we challenge that and to bring that up. So it could be us that help us. And it doesn't have to be anybody that's not from our community.
You know, what I'm finding is that a lot of incarcerated individuals are not only rehabilitating themselves, finding ways to rehabilitate themselves, and finding ways to do something productive behind those prison walls. Because as you mentioned, especially around with people of color, a lot of these people are being denied the opportunities to do anything productive because the system knows, the DOC knows, that when they get ready to go up for parole or pardons, they don't have anything to show that they've been productive throughout the years. They're not going anywhere. And this is where a lot of help needs to be put in place by people on the outside that have the ability, either through the legal services or through the advocacy in other ways in big organizations. And unfortunately, these things don't take place. I've been trying to bring awareness about these issues even to politicians, to legislative members. They know the Department of Correction lies. They know that they do all these things, and yet they don't do anything about it in these areas. They're looking at criminal justice reform, but this is a reform that really is very important and needs to be taken care of by our legislative lawmakers.
Well, yeah. Well, there's really no true reform unless there's some acknowledgement when I say the system is so rotten from the core in. It's built to behaviors, right? So it's institutionalized into how they make decisions, and they put band-aids on situations. So I give you an example. We talk about board reform. So in California, if you go on to lockedin.info and look at our action segment, we're asking for a policy change with the California Board of Parole hearings. So this is what I call an oxymoron when you're trying to make two opposite things fit together. So we have the Bill Clinton tough on crime era, the crime bill, when he sucked the education out of prison, right, and locked everybody up for nickel bags of cocaine or rocks, the 100 to the 101 rule and all that. So they created this Board of Parole hearings, and they were extreme. They didn't parole anybody. They had like a 3% grant rate. California prison surged to over 180,000 people, and the correctional officers, the district attorneys, the prosecutors, the attorney generals that stamped this overcrowded, this overpopulation, that stamped this use of miscarriage of justice, that were locking up 14-year-olds, giving them 340 years, 17-year-olds, giving them 230 years, urban terrorism, and whatever excuse they could lock up poor people they use. Now, flash forward. You have the murder of George Floyd. You have some progressive movements. Politicians are forced to create change in certain areas. And what California does now is the same people that helped create the problems, that were COs at the time, that were district attorneys at the time, that were prosecutors at the time, they put them in charge of making the decision to judge your mental capacity for committing crime in the future to let you out. And to me, that is absolutely ridiculous. You're not one, you're not a mental health professional. Two, your background and education came from the tough on crime era when you were the one that were over prosecuting black and brown people and poor people and filling these prisons up. Now, all these years later, this is your second career, and now you're in charge of who gets to decide to go home. It's a subjective process. You can't be objective. If you spent 20-plus years as a prosecutor prosecuting with a 90% success rate, with no bumps in the road, so-called. And now you're talking about you understand reform and you can make an objective decision based on somebody's capability to commit crime again. And I'll finish this on this note. They only get 70 hours worth of training a year. And that's the basic education stuff, criminal thinking, anger management, alcohol anonymous, domestic violence, all the basic stuff. They don't have a background or education in mental health. And to me, California is really missing the mark on real reform when it comes to the Board of Parole here.
You know, Ben, an advocate messaged me yesterday, last evening, and I'm going to tell you, I never thought about this, but she was saying not only what you just said about the law enforcement and COs and officials being tested as well for evaluated, but she also mentioned drug testing. And this is something that I never thought about, but to me, this is very imperative that these people be tested periodically, randomly for drugs. Because a lot of these people overseeing the prisoners and overseeing the people in the community, they have their issues too. They're human, and this is what this is also what needs to be done. But as far as the prosecutor, I'm going to tell you my own personal experience with prosecutors. They have done severe damage to so many prisoners, and I'll tell you they're as corrupt as possible. And I'm not saying all of them. Like everyone has good and bad in every position, every field. But the people that are letting it go, what you're saying, I was watching the news the other day with that young 19-year-old that just killed 10 black people, hate crime. And the judge said that he will never see the light of day. You know what? I felt bad for him because he was apologizing for what he did, right? But the thing is, this kid, to me, was doing something that was taught to him. And we need to look at the parents. We need to look at the people in the community that are so racist that they are turning these young kids into hate crime murderers. And no one looks at that. This young man is going to be in prison for the rest of his life. And he was crying. He was apologizing to the families. But it's too late. It's too late.
Yeah, it's in depth. It's too late. And it's a subconscious training, right? I have a close friend of mine. He runs our program inside of CTF Soledad Central. And he said, I was reflecting back when my mother gave me a toy gun when I was around 5 years old with the orange tip. And he said, the first thing I did with it was take the orange tip off because it didn't look real enough. So, you know, from adolescence, from pre-adolescence, through movies, through interactions with certain adults, we glorify violence. We teach the idea of masculinity comes in violence, bravado, and really in a lot of ways, ignorance. And when we grow up in that type of toxic masculine culture, we don't know how to act. We feel like, I know guys that I grew up with, it was a norm to have a gun, right? And if you told me you didn't have a gun, I would thought you was lying. I thought it was a mandatory thing for everybody to have. So they get these young black men, these young brown men, fascinated with guns. Then when they get caught with guns, they give them, in the case of California, within the early 2090, they were given life sentences, right? But, you know, you push this image out of the tough guy that you got to have a gun. You have to present yourself this way. You have to talk this way. You have to walk this way. You have to dress this way. And every single way society pushes this image on you, it's all negative. It's all negative. Now you have these little young black kids or these people of color growing up economically deprived. They don't maybe not have the public school, doesn't have the best education, the classroom. Is flooded. You have a single parent that works all day. She just doesn't have the time or the energy to support him with his school study. So all he has is his bravado. Because if I don't have no money and I'm not the brightest person, I could peacock though. I could stick out my chest. I could throw my shoulders back and I could at least make you fear me out of respect. I could make you respect me out of showing, making you fear me. And in a lot of cases throughout this country, in a lot of urban communities, in a lot of ghettos, that's exactly what's happening, right? Bravado, because for lack of purpose, for lack of education, and for lack of having real goals.
You know something, you're right in these areas. And I'll tell you, I've experienced a lot in my lifetime. And I'm going to tell you, I was a single parent. I raised him, and God bless me, with the young man that was never a problem. He works since the age of 15. He went to school after graduating from high school, went to prep school, went to college for 4 years. In his last year of college, someone told him he could make more money than he was making at a gas station on school vacation. They said if he was to get his license to be a bartender, because there was a lot of money in tips, which he did. He went into another field for two months, and that's where everything fell apart for him, because he was never involved with substances, drugs, or anything. He was never involved with the law. He was had an excellent reputation. But see, sometimes the racism, because relationships, and people have to watch this, because sometimes these mixed relationships, and I come from a family of multi-relationships, but sometimes you get involved with somebody of the Caucasian race, and what happens is, just like that Michelle Carter talked to her boyfriend into committing suicide, these are the type of situations that can sometimes happen. And then what happens in a long run, sometimes it backfires, and it's not suicide, it's homicide. And you mentioned guns. Mentioned guns.
Yeah.
Okay, we need to look at why aren't the legislative members forcing the NRA to stop selling these guns or doing serious background checks? This is the problem. The NRA is the problem for the whole mass shootings in this country. Every mass shooting.
Well, you have the NRA, right? And I just want to speak on that. But it's not so much the NRA, right, as it was maybe 10, 15 years ago. That's why the NRA just recently filed for bankruptcy. There's more extreme gun organizations that are not talked about on the mass media circuit. But if you look and do some research, like NRA, number one competitor, I can't remember their name right now, but there's some extreme ideologists that believe in, hey, only way you're taking our guns is out of our cold, dead hands. And this is what this culture is. So I'm a universal believer it is when you invest in chaos, you get chaos back. So this country has invested in war. You know, it is invested in violence. It is invested in this bravado of the tough guy, Westerner cowboy, you know, ride 'em or die type of mentality. And this is what you get back. You know, this is what you put out into the universe. So the universe is giving you what you're giving it. Now, far as relationships, you know, there's never just one thing. There's always a multitude of things when it becomes when someone commits to a decision to hurt someone else, or when someone commits to a decision to start doing drugs or going down this very dark road. Because, you know, people only get high for one thing and one thing only, and that's to change the way they feel. You know, people act out and do violent things to hurt people because they're burying something that they don't want to deal with, so it comes out in other ways.
Exactly.
And it's never just that one thing. So as black men and as brown people, or just poor people in general, right, whites and everybody, one of our biggest defects of character is learning how to communicate, having emotional intelligence, and how to convey our needs in a healthy way where we're not ashamed. It's a lot of shame to say, you know what? The reality of it is, you know, I'm not a really good person. I haven't been a good father. I haven't been a good son or a good city, just an overall good guy. But I'm not a failure because I'm acknowledging it, and I'm going to put things in my life to change it. The hard part is getting the guy to admit that he's been failing. People compartmentalize. constantly, right? Oh, man, I'm a great dad. I just stole a little dope. This is what happens on the prison yard, right? So, yeah, man, I just give my daughter $300. Man, I got this money, sell some dope, be it if it's spice, weed, whatever, crystal meth on the yard. And I bought my daughter some stuff for a high school graduation. But he's compartmentalizing. He doesn't understand the best gift you could have gave your daughter for a high school graduation is have your black ass there, you know? But I don't want to admit that I can't go, because that'll make me depressed. And it make me look in the mirror. Yeah.
Another thing we have to address, too, is mental illnesses. I say it all the time. We have an addiction of mental illnesses and addictions in this country. We have.
Absolutely.
We definitely have problems with those issues. And as you mentioned, a lot of people that do drugs are trying to cover something up. A lot of them have been traumatized, just like those with the psychological issues have been traumatized at some point in their life, and they try to cover up with substances or drugs of any sort. So these are, but the thing is, in this country, we have a country that rather than put the money into appropriate long-term residential treatment facilities, they prefer to just throw everybody in prison and throw away the key, because this way they're making money off of these prisoners. They're using these prisoners to do their modern day slavery, work for what, 90 cents
a day. Yeah, not even 90 cents. That's an overstate. California, you're getting an average of 8 cents. So the public industry authority, this is so in California, the PIA system, they take money out of taxpayer money, the general fund, right? Now, PI says, you know what, we're not allowed to make a profit, right? So they tell the taxpayers, don't even worry about it. So what they do is they get a set of inmates, right? And it's really a slave tactic. It's a Willie Lynch tactic of divide and conquer. So they give majority of the population 8 cents, and they give this other population 35 cents. And they give them a small perk like, hey, only you guys could buy ice cream Monday through Friday. Something as small as that in prison is really big, that I'm able to buy a pint of ice cream when I want, compared to these other 1,000 guys that can't. Right, so they get these small group of guys comfortable, and they get them to do this work, and they make millions of dollars. And now remember, this is coming from taxpayer money out the general fund, because it's money provided to other state agencies. But these guys are so complacent, and they're so happy with their job and their work and getting fat. The Buddhism call it an ice cream and cake mentality. I don't focus on nothing else but ice cream and cake. And what happens is they save them tons of money. They save them hundreds of thousands of dollars. Then what PIA does, they hide it into their union, and they do, and they give bonuses and raises, right? And the surplus money does, and the equipment is over 50 years old. Every now and again, every 10 years, they may buy something up to date, right? And none of these skills or trades are marketable, because the equipment is outdated, right? It's just about be content with this ice cream and cake we're giving you, and don't ask about a raise. Don't ask about how much money's going in and out of here. And they make the inmate, because he's an inmate at this time, complacent, and he doesn't challenge anything because he's giving this ice cream and cake. And CDCR gets fat off the hog. And no money, no surplus money goes back to the taxpayer. It doesn't go to the community. It doesn't go to community projects or whatever. So and nobody calls them on it, right? Everybody is afraid, even grassroots organizations, because the ones who can push back, they take CDCR money. And if you're taking CDCR money, you don't want to upset CDCR because, you know, you have bills to pay. You have staffs to look after, and you can't push so far. That's why GEO Corporation, the number one private prison corporation in the world, is getting $200 million worth of rehabilitative contracts. You know, isn't that ridiculous? Like, you made, I think they made a couple of billion dollars a few years ago based on private prison, and now you're sitting in front of people and you're going to teach them how to stay out of prison? And this the joke that's going on in some areas of this country.
You know what I see happening in this system is that our taxpayer dollars are going into the Department of Corrections, into the criminal justice system. But the thing is, everything that's being done is being done by the prisoners to make money for the DOC, and everything that they need financially is being done by the prisoners. You have on the internet, you go on there, God, COs caught smuggling drugs into the prisons. Well, you know they've got the prisoners selling them. Then you've got these movie producers making money off of these, unfortunately, the blood, sweat, and tears of victims and offenders, which to me, if you can't have it both ways. You don't want crime in the community. Fight to end all of this corruption in these movies that are so violent. And then you've got people that are sending up taxpayer dollars that are going into the food for prisoners, and the prisoners are not getting the right food. They're getting mashed potatoes and rice. It keeps them fat, so everybody thinks they're eating well. But who's getting the good food?
What you do is if you go to Access Secure Package, I think they're in 30s, or Union Supply Secure Package, or Walkenhurst Secure Package, these are approved vendors through the Department of Corrections that are allowed to send care packages. And if you just go through any of those books, what you'll see is 90% of processed fats that are just unbelievable, right? And the average incarcerated person now is dealing with obesity. You know, back in the 80s, you know, the stereotypical guy coming out of prison, you know, big, swole, up top, little legs and things like that. Now the average guy coming out of prison, he has a stomach hanging over his belt because he's been eating cupcakes, Hostess cupcakes, and chips for the last 10 years. CDCR in California is just trying to officially make a shift to a healthier, more smaller diet within their trade, but they're running a con. So, and I don't want to get too much into this, but this is because I'm really about solutions, right? And we've been talking about problems, but I want to start talking about solutions. But I do want to say this. So every prison has a food manager. Now, based on the money that food manager saves within a given year, he gets a bonus. So his money is directly related to how much the incarcerated person eats. So this is what happens. He orders and buys the cheapest, most unhealthiest foods. Then he tries to short it. He tries to do every manipulation he can to get around standards, the universal standard nutrition standards, right? He'll do whatever he can, right? Then he'll say, well, you don't need an orange. We'll give you a tomato. Then he'll get the 3-day-old tomatoes, the ones that are soft. They're barely ripened, or they're overused or whatever. I met the criteria. It looks great on paper, right? If you were to go into their office and say, oh, these guys get all this, but everything doesn't look great. It just because it looks great on paper doesn't mean the actual practical movement of it is great until you see it in action. And what CDCR does, the Department of Correction, is they have great stuff that looks great on paper. Then when you go in and you see how it's ran, you're like, oh, my God, this is a clusterfuck, right? This is ridiculous. But people are, like, complacent. They don't know how to challenge it. And they don't know the next steps to take. Or they don't know how to engage with one another to stop injustice. And that's kind of what Locked In is trying to do, to be on the front line of obvious injustice, like we're talking about.
You know, Families Against Mandatory Minimums has been repeatedly trying to get people to encourage our legislative members to start going into the prisons at least once or twice a year to hear the voices of the incarcerated. And the media as well. The media needs to go in instead of reporting one-sided stories. But these are
No, and this is what happens, though. This is something you have to understand. We know when the media is coming. So first of all, I want to say something. You mentioned something earlier about guards and inmates doing the prison. Incarcerated, and I don't even like to use the word inmate. It's derogatory, and it shouldn't be used. But the residents that are incarcerated within the prison run literally everything, right? The officer or administrations, they do very little. They're trained. When a one administrator leaves, the new administrator comes, and guess who trains them? The clerk. The last clerk for the last, he trains them on what to do with paperwork coming in, because this is the place where they live, and they stay, and they've been doing the work longer. He's been, that clerk may have three administrators. So they run everything. So that's the first part of that. I lost train of thought, right? You had me on that. What were you presenting?
You mentioned solutions, and I would like to hear what your solutions are with your organization, and we can get back to that another time. But right now, can you tell us about the work that you do with Locked In?
So we're built on three pillars: communication, education, action. Locked In CEA Inc., right? So within communication, everything has to start with me being able to communicate with other diverse cultures and communities, because we can't scream at each other. So, and we want to be able to tell stories of injustice. So we have several podcasts, right? Our podcast, Breaking Bread, you know, we've had sheriffs on there, judges, politicians, and I may not agree with a lot of these people, ideology or how they go about doing things. But, you know, my feelings, I can allow my feelings to get in the way of progression and change. I have to be able to have these dialects, this dialogue, so we could move forward. On our Behind Justice podcast, we highlight on the things that you were sharing earlier, right? These mandatory minimums throughout, we target people throughout this country in different states who've been taken advantage of, who've been left for dead, who've had corruption and manipulation and outright police misconduct and done to them, and we give them the voice. We give their family a voice. And what I've realized is people are just happy to be heard because they feel hopeless. And we don't want anybody to feel hopeless. In our education segment, what we do is we're focusing on adolescents. So, you know, you'll go to the Boys and Girls Club. These young people will go. And the Boys and Girls Club is good, right? And they'll teach them how to interact with mentors. They'll play baseball, football. What we do is we make young people socially aware of what's happening in their community. You want to learn how to play football, go ahead. I'll drop you off at the Boys and Girls Club. I want you to learn how to use critical thinking skills and how to see an injustice and how to create a social justice movement, a nonviolent movement, and create change. And we do that with system-impacted people. We have a 13-week curriculum called the 5 Steps, where we teach people how to talk and communicate in responsible ways with other people from diverse cultures and how to express themselves and know how to present themselves in any and every situation. And we target people 12 through 17 and 18 through 25 to do this work, because young people are more open to change than older. Not saying older guys can't change, but the work we do, we focus on the younger people. Action is practical action, right? Hey, frontline stuff. You know, policies we want to change, procedures we want looked at, letter writing campaigns for people who've been unfairly and unjustifiably sentenced. So one case is we had a young brother named Leonard Kemp Jr. that we just helped get released from prison. He was 15 years old. They gave him 33 years of life. They refused to give him a plea bargain. He didn't have a murder. He was a confused kid that did something real reckless. And And after about 13 years, we advocated on his behalf, had our members write into the district attorney's office, had our members write into CDCR, and he got out of prison. So, you know, it's all about us coming together as one and putting pressure on the right authorities, the right politicians to say, hey, this is not acceptable, you know. And I want to let your viewers know and people know you absolutely have a voice. And it gets louder when 1,000 people screaming at the same time, at the same people. So what I run into a lot is, oh, man, it's not going to mean anything. You know what I'm saying? What's the use? And I push back on that, man. There's value in every person. As long as you educate yourself, get committed, and get with the right people. And that's what Locked In is about, and that's what we encourage.
Role model that. And I speak of this all the time. There are no role models for these young people today. You're the role model that is needed across the country. And I really admire the work that you're doing. I really do. And I hope the audience, as you said, I started a letter writing campaign on Facebook years ago.
Yeah.
I got locked out of it. But the thing is, it was good because people were able to put their stories out there and ask for help and advocating for them. And we would be writing letters on their behalf. It's still there, but I just can't get back in. And so these are some of the things that is needed out there, role models. We need these pastors to come out there. We need these big brother, big sister used to be good until there was a lot of negativity that came out about them. But we also need our legislative members to get more involved in the work that they're doing in the penal system. If they're not going to go in and meet with these incarcerated individuals, they can't really know everything that's going on.
No, and some of them do get involved. Some of them are allies. Some of them are, especially in California, right? Even though they call this the left coast, but our prisons are outdated, right? Like there's prisons in the Bible Belt that are way more advanced than California state prison. So I do want to go back to what you said about role models and some of the old prior organizations that you mentioned. The problem with those organizations were you didn't meet the child or the adolescent of where he was at right then and there. So what people have a problem with, older people and even church-going people, because they give great advice. But I'll speak to myself in this case. I was very involved in gang activity, and I started when I was 12. Up to that point, I had great advice. People told me to stay out of trouble. Go to school. You'll do good. You'll be successful. Don't carry that gun all the time. You're going to eventually use it. If you do this, you'll get shot. I had great advice all the time. I didn't need advice. I needed somebody just to listen.
Exactly.
You know, and that was the problem. And I needed somebody to meet me where I was at, you know, and understand. They did a study, right? The national gang crimes, right? They did a study. It's called a gang fact sheet. And they interviewed 10,000 active gang members, 18 from the age of 14 and 17, in 17 different states, right? And something interesting happened. They asked about 91% of them, when they asked them, did they believe in God, they said yes, right? And that's like blew me back a little bit, right? Because the principles conflict on which you say you believe in, right? People that's in the gang lifestyle, the principles is, you know, I shoot, I hurt, I maim, I cause chaos for the furtherment of the hood, for the gang, right? I got to push the gang forward. But my principles of someone who says that I believe in God is loving my neighbor, you know, being humbled, you know, showing love. So, but that lets me know the true core of yourself is in you. So what we do is we take system-impacted people like me, we put them in a safe environment, and we get to the core of your real principles, right? And we let you know who you are and that the world and the street, the things that you represented, that's not your true self. And you've been creating, you've been creating obstacles for yourself. But we meet these young people where they're at. If a young kid comes in and he's sagging and he's saying cuz or blood every other word, that's okay. That's a, I'm going to let him be there. I'm not going to tell him nothing. But in the 13th week, he's going to know. When he comes back in, he's not going to be saying cuz and blood all the time. He's going to be sitting straight. He's going to be making eye contact. And I'm not going to give him no bit of advice. Our curriculum is structured. We're going to guide him into it where he figures it out. He figures it out for himself. We're not giving it to him. He's figuring it out for himself. And that's the best type of knowledge you can have, the ones you figure out for yourself. We just put things strategically in place that helps him get there. And that's the difference from what we're doing with other organizations.
A lot of these young people, when they say they believe in God, they do, but they're getting mixed messages from those that are preaching it. And I'll tell you, a lot of times when you talk to these kids, in the Bible, in 2 Timothy 3:16, it says all scripture has been inspired of God and is beneficial for teaching, reproving, setting things straight. And this is something that they don't learn. They don't teach this. They teach in 2 Timothy 3:1, the critical time's hard to deal with. People are going to have cold hearts. They're going to be doing all these things. But they also forget to teach them that Christ Jesus was also in prison. So he was also in prison. Yeah. He suffered just like a lot of them are suffering, these young people today, and a lot of those people behind those prison walls. They're suffering. It talks about a lot of these things.
They agree. So on a personal note, I believe in God. But at the same time, I understand when I'm dealing with young people, it ain't nothing about it about me. So I purposely keep religion out of it. Because this is what happens when you bring religion into a situation, especially nowadays, right? Now, I exclude my personal belief because when I walk in a room full of young people, as I just mentioned, it's never about me. Or what I believe. I got to meet them where they're at. And if you go into a room full of young 15-year-olds at a juvenile facility that gangbanging, and you just gave them what you gave me, Peter was in jail, God loves you, and all that, they're going to immediately check out. Oh, man, this is some church shit. Oh, man, I'm out of here. And they're going to miss everything you have to say. Now, you could be saying the most powerful, educational, life-inspiring thing. As soon as they hear certain things, they're going to check out.
But
they're
going to
check out.
In my situation as a social worker, I've always tried to find the spot that we could relate on. Because this is what they need. You find a spot that they can relate to. And a lot of them in this day and age, we can relate to a lot of things. We don't preach the Bible, but we pull out the parts in the Bible that relate to the situations they may be in.
Yeah.
And that's what we need to focus on. They took the
schools. And look, I'm not saying there's no value in that, right? There's value in everything productive. It's just how do we strategically put things in place to have the best impact, right? And it may have to be in different tiers. How things start is how they be and how they wind up. Ending up and how they go through the relationship. And I'm really big on having impact the first week, engaging the first week, and being careful because I'm still trying to bring them into the fold. And I know if I say or present something and they're just emotionally cut off or mentally check out. And once they mentally check out, it's almost impossible to get them back.
I would try to get people like Snoop Dogg and people like that wear their pants down to the behind, but they got a career. I would try to get them to talk to these youth because these young people.
Snoop has a big organization and he does a lot of work, but it ain't even Snoop. And with all due respect, because he's just a celebrity, and Snoop is still considered a Crip, and he can still consider that. So he alienates a lot of people. So, if Snoop, my background was I was heavily involved with Bloods. So if you would have put Snoop in front of me when I was 17 or something, I would have said, F Snoop. I don't give a damn about no Snoop. You know, what they need is consistency. And no celebrity is going to be consistent. We require every single one of our sister impact and mentor to be educated in alcohol and drug studies. We obligated them to be a certified California life coach. We're obligating our mentors to be trained and educated in evidence-based motivational therapy. And what we do is, and I should have told you this, right? Let me go back. Within our 13-week program, let's say that program happens on Monday. It's a two-hour program once a week. So let's say it's from Monday, 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. Every day, that mentor is assigned to call and touch bases with each one of those youths, right? Because we don't want you to just come in here for 2 hours. We tell you what not to do or whatever that stuff may look like. Then we'll see you next week. It's not that type of program. We know we're not going to create change like that in our community with some of these young people. We're on you every day. We're calling you every day. We're talking. We're taking a holistic approach to your recovery, and we're living by example. And by us just being around you and talking to you every day, you're going to fall in line, because that's what the gang culture is about. It's about symbolism and falling in line, right? If you go to any neighborhood, Crip, Blood, Mexicans, whatever, what you'll hear first is a bunch of Little This and Baby Zach. So Little G-Rod, Baby G-Rod, everybody is following somebody older than them. And the person they following, he's just as blind as everybody else. So we want them to follow positive role models that have left the gang lifestyle, and that's creating change and living by example. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it was like Tukey Williams before they executed him.
Yeah, exactly. They didn't want leaders. They didn't want us to have leaders, so they killed him. Right.
And Arnold Schwarzenegger destroyed him. But it's people that can do the good that seem to be deprived of the opportunities, or they're not. Look at Scared Straight. They used to have Scared Straight, but the thing is, Scared Straight is not the thing. Like you said, bring them in.
Don't work. Yeah,
no.
That Scared Straight does not work.
No.
Yeah.
But let's in group meetings. If you were allowed to go inside the penal system and bring these youth in with you and sit in groups with people that went in when they were youth, when they went in for being involved in gangs and criminal activities, and here they are now in their 50s and 60s and 70s, these are the ones that you want to, if the Department of Corrections would allow you to go in and bring these, a pilot project.
Well, they some of them do, but I want to share with your listeners one important thing. Experience is not enough, right? It's not enough, and that's what I'm challenging incarcerated men to do that have the opportunity. So what I mean, experience is not enough. I could go in there and I could talk to a young man who is in the gang culture just like I am, or who struggled with drugs or something, but I don't want to take from his story by just giving him mine, because my personal story ain't enough. What if he was molested from 6 to 7 years old? I wasn't molested from 6 to 7 years old. What if his mother was on cocaine and his daddy had life and he had to go into 7-8 group homes? I didn't have to go into 7-8 group homes. So education, when we do this work, is key. Personal life experience is not enough. So for your listeners, or for people who know somebody incarcerated, already looked at, if you're going to be in there, get your associates. Stay focused. Get your bachelor's if you're able to. Get into social work. Then that life experience will make you a better counselor. It'll make you a better social worker with that education. But never, one of the biggest problems guys have, they think their personal experience is not enough. And what happens is, and this is key, they wind up doing more damage than good to the child or to the adolescent. They cause more damage, because when a person's not educated, what he does, he wings it. He guesses, right? And the child winds up getting misinformation, and it winds up hurting them in the long run. So education is key within our own community to educate ourselves and the ability to regurgitate it and give it back to these young people where it's impactful.
Yeah. And these gang members, they need to be encouraged. If they're going to be in gangs, they need to be encouraged to try to do good as gang members, to try to bring dignity to themselves as a gang rather than to go out and do the criminal acts, because they're affecting people that are going through the same thing, many of them, that they're going through. So if
No, absolutely. But just, and once again, criminals, as a criminal, I delete, I distort, and I overgeneralize everything. So you can't rationalize with somebody that has those three key things as defects of character, right? Because you don't understand. You don't get it. This is the worst thing, gang members. This is just what we do. It is what it is. And that's what I go back to when I was a kid, and these 50-year-old white counselors were asking me why I was doing the things that I did. And I just could answer, this is just what we do. This is all I know. I don't have the emotional intelligence or the insight to even understand what you're telling me right now, because I'm so caught up with the neighborhood and just being a part of something and feeling important. The Maslow law of the seven stages of human need, one of them is to love and be loved, and one of them is to feel important. They said every single human being in the face of this earth wants that, to feel important and to be loved. So once again, I'll reiterate, what happens when a person grows up poor in a single-parent household? What happens when a person doesn't get the education he needs to feel confident? You know, how does he feel important? Where does he get love from? He feels important by beating the shit out of everybody else and causing chaos. He gets respect. How does he get love? He finds guys just like him, and they say they love each other, and they commit to each other. You know, but that's the thing. It's corrupt love, but for them, it's still love. So, you know, how we approach these young people, we approach them with love, compassion, non-judgment, and patience, because we've been there. And the education, that's where the discipline comes in. That's why you don't get frustrated. Yeah.
Dan, we're getting close to the closing time. So can you give the audience your information and how they can connect with you if they want to volunteer or whatever? And I'd like to continue this on another day, if you can let me know a good time and day that you can come back on again, because everything you're talking about is so vital. It's so important to talk about and to work out. And hopefully we'll have people that will be joining you or coming on so that they can learn how they can help in those areas. But if you can, give the audience your information and how they can get in contact with you and Locked In, Inc.
Yeah, so you can go to our webpage. That is lockedin.info. That's LOCKEDIN.INFO. You can email me at my email at lockedinca@gmail. So, yeah, you can contact us. We do offer our curriculum, our services. We can do via Zoom, but it's better if we're in person. But yeah, any questions that you may have for me, just email me personally. I'll respond.
Okay, I really think what you're doing is awesome, and you're doing it with very careful thought in the way you do it, which is very good. Because as you say, sometimes bringing a lot of religious info into it is not the way to go. But we actually have to also let them know that what they're taught sometimes is not always the right way. It's not always the right thing. So we need to support them in that way. But again, there's so many people out there that are trying to help these people, these young people in the communities. We have to remember also, we're up against a battle. Because these people in the communities, there's a lot that may want to help. There's a lot that aren't helping for whatever reason. But there's also a lot that are still trying to divide, trying to keep the separation. between those who can actually help these young people and those who can actually get them in their corner. And that goes with law enforcement, that goes with people in society, members of society. It goes with your own peers. So I really appreciate your coming on and talking about these things. I'd love to have you come back on again, if you will.
Well, just email me or you can contact me on Facebook and we can maybe set up another date. I have to be honest, I'm extremely busy, but there's always time to have productive conversations about change and how does it look and how can we move forward. So I'll make time.
Okay, I have an opening in 2 weeks, not the following Thursday, but the Thursday after or any time in March. If you want, you can let me know what day you'd want to come on, what time. I will work around your schedule. I thank you so much for coming on, Van, and what you're doing is awesome. You're really doing an awesome.
All right, thank you for the opportunity, and I'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, audience, I want to let you know that we will have Van back on with us again. I thank all of you for listening in. And there are so many things that have gone on in all of our lives. And we have to come together in unity to try to resolve these issues. When we have people like Van Houston on with us, Locked In Inc., and we have others, Brian Winters from an American Union from Vermont and Society First from Florida. We have the former correctional officers and lieutenants, and we have all these people from even other countries that are working and trying to work with us to have this criminal justice reform. Let's come together. Let's talk more about it. And join, I will let you know, I will let everyone know when Van Houston will be back on with us and we can finish our conversation then. Van, again, thank you so much. I was honored to have you on with us. And you have so much to offer, and I appreciate everything that you're doing.
Thank you. I'm humbled. I'll talk to you soon, okay? All right, bye-bye.